Hello and welcome to the Yahoo Sports Fantasy Podcast. I'm Liz Loza. I'm in Tampa and in the same room as, wait for it, Scott Pianowski. Finally, been doing this show for how many weeks now? And we finally get to look each other in the eye, though you're not, you are avoiding eye contact. I am looking at you very intensely. And also on the other side of the room, we've got Mr. Brad Evans, who
you
is more glassy
eyed.
Well, I was just going to mention your glassy eyes. We've been having a good time here at the fantasy.
We're both haggard.
This is the FSTA, now the FSGA. Brad, this is something, a change that you are particularly passionate about in Tampa.
Yeah, well, Scott is as well.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
Fantasy Sports and Gaming Association. That's the new name change from the Fantasy Sports Trade Association. And it is, what, lack of a better pun, game changing for the industry just because, yeah, you like that, didn't you? It's early. And you could tell that we were out late last night. So you got to just roll with the brain cells slowly firing right now. But no, it's big because, you know, there's a massive overlap we've seen in the Ipsos research between wagering and fantasy playing. And, you know, Scott and I were very public about the fact that we like a little action on the side with some of the games. And, you know, we're also ardent supporters of fantasy. So there are a lot of people just like us throughout the entirety of the industry in this post-PASPA era with the groundswell that's occurring with the wagering space, state by state, trying to figure out the logistics there. But the popularity, Scotty, is only going to grow and probably at an exponential rate. So it's wise for the FSTA to change the name and fully embrace gaming as a part of the overall genre.
And what's great for the fantasy player is that if you just have experience as a fantasy player, you already have a lot of the handicapping chops that are going to really come into play as the industry changes, whether it's you want to play games straight out or you become interested in player props or some of the hybrid games that are going to be exploding all over the industry. And I'm sure Yahoo will be a big player in that, but other sites as well. The essence of fantasy is I can predict the NFL or Major League Baseball or whatever sport it is better than you can. And you're going to have more ways than possible, more ways than previous to show those skills going forward.
And daily fantasy is obviously probably the closest product to the overlap. And let's talk about, now we don't have a daily fantasy game for the Super Bowl.
No, it's not a single game contest that we offer. There are other sites that do, but at Yahoo DFS, we do not.
We do not. But we have been offering, we've given you our bargains and fades. So we're just going to open it up and talk about the Super Bowl in general. Now that we do know that the Los Angeles Rams.
Oh, here we go.
Burying the lead here, but go ahead.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll be heading to Atlanta to take on Scott's New England Patriots.
Again. Back.
Well,
yeah, back
the Rams have never taken them on, so that part of
The St. Louis Rams. This is a nice symmetry if the Patriots happen to win, that the Brady era could start with an upset of the Rams in that first Super Bowl trip. The Mike Martz greatest show on turf Rams. That may have been before you bandwagon fanned onto the Rams. So different city, different time,
jab.
Different quarterback, different running back.
But you know what the difference between being a Rams fan and being a Bears fan is? 3 points, baby.
Look, you're still shrouded in controversy
in the
fact that you're there.
Yeah. So. It is about the kicking game.
A field goal. That's the difference.
Here's what I want people to appreciate about the Patriots. Okay, the big story, I think, in the NFL this year was that defense was almost impossible and the middle of the field's wide open and oh my God, look at the passing games, look at the offenses and everything. And very quietly, the Patriots have morphed into a power running game. Their offense is about their offensive line. It's about three running backs who rotate in. You know, Brady is still a factor, but this isn't a high-flying passing game. Brady didn't have a great regular season or fantasy season. Probably the end of Rob Gronkowski's career. I think he's going to retire no matter what the result is. We'll see about Brady. You know, Edelman's a good player, but he's not one of the, you'd never say he's one of the top 10 receivers in football or something like this. The Patriots are pounding people, holding the ball, long scoring drives in a league where it's all about pinball. It's just interesting that they're zagging in a world where everybody was zigging and you know, throwing for 400 yards a week. And, you know, Mahomes is going to be the MVP. What a great season he had. And here's New England taking a page out of the 1978 playbook.
Well, it's Belichick's consistent ability to adjust, right? He's not attached to any particular scheme.
Master of adaptation.
Correct. Mm. So kudos to the New England Patriots. It's very hard for me to believe that Tom Brady will lose the Super Bowl two nights. Lord, I lost a lot of nights over the past year. That Tom Brady will lose the Super Bowl 2 years in a row. They are
505 and no punts last year. I mean, it wasn't his fault. He made one bad play. I mean, he was terrific in that game.
Well, and Sonny Michel is really, like, you know, just to kind of piggyback on what Scott was saying. I mean, Michel is really evolved into a stud Corey Dillon like running back for this franchise. You know, the guy that can carry the mail 20 times per game, take the licking and keep on ticking. I mean, his yards after contact numbers in the postseason have been outstanding. The eye test, he's been punching it in. It's just brilliance. It really is.
Yeah, I hammered that pick all year, and now I'm thinking maybe it was right. I mean, remember, first-round running back, what are they doing? Spending first-round capital, albeit late first-round capital on a running back. It's such a replaceable position. Running backs don't matter. You can find them anywhere.
It's working out now.
Yeah,
and you know, remember Michelle had that stretch of about five games, middle portion of the regular season, and he was just gangbusters. And then kind of took a back seat, faded a little bit.
But that was also because Josh Gordon was a factor for a portion of the season. And again, they add a piece, they adjust, they lose a piece, they adjust. Philip Dorsett has come on in the postseason.
He scored in three straight games, actually.
Yeah, and that's been incredible to watch. So I guess the question is, well, let's talk about the line is opening. The Patriots are the favorites. They're giving 2.5, and the point total is 57 and a half, depending where you're looking.
Side? Yep.
I think we are all in agreement that that seems a bit high. I don't know, Scott, if you are. I would take the under on that.
I would shade under, too.
I don't think the Patriots are going to have trouble covering, personally.
Well, and it's the style that they're exhibiting right now. Just again, going back to what Scott said, with this ground and pound system that they have implemented. And the defense, that's another underrated portion of New England. They had their struggles in the trenches. They've given up some chunk plays on the ground. But on the back end, Stephon Gilmore and friends, they've done a tremendous job defensively in that area. Now, you didn't necessarily see it the entire game against Patrick Mahomes, but Patrick Mahomes is alien. He's on another planet right now in terms of what he brings to the table. But that defense is a very underappreciated part of this direction New England has taken. So, yeah, I think they're going to lean on defense. They're going to lean on the ground game. And that always screams under, under, under.
Yeah, they want to possess the ball in this game. They want to have a time of possession edge. Look, remember the snap edge in the Kansas City game where they had a 2-1 snap edge. And that Kansas City defense was absolutely out of gas.
Well, they were shredded.
In the overtime.
Yeah, they were done.
I really think Andy Reid screwed up not calling a proactive timeout in the overtime. That is defense.
Taking those three timeouts.
Imagine that.
Guy.
Yeah. He's going to take those timeouts with him. But. And this Rams defense, the weakness of it is the run defense. You know, as much as they have great
talent. Well, Dominican Sue has come on over the postseason stretch here. I mean, he has mauled in a way. Like, he did hold Ezekiel Elliott to,
total, but that's still been a bugaboo for them the entire
year.
Sure,
but I also think it's something that they're aware of and they're working on.
It's been good in the postseason.
Yeah.
The rushing defense has been good in the postseason.
It's been better.
He's finally getting his money's worth now.
Well, and
I want to mention the Patriots defense real quick.
Go ahead.
Because we talked on the Patriots defense. We can go back to the Rams, but we should note that Brian Flores, the defensive coordinator, is now going to be, of course, once this Super Bowl is over, the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. Mm-hmm. So the AFC
is that
East.
Exciting?
I mean, the AFC East is very into themselves.
I guess
so. There's some hires there.
They ran out of jobs for Flores because he's had just about every job in his. I mean, he was an offensive coach for a while. He's been a secondary coach. I think his technical role right now is the linebacker.
Born in Brooklyn
coach,
and made his whole career. Went to BC, I believe, and spent his entire career with the Patriots.
Obviously, the Patriot coaching tree has not been particularly successful, but Flores has worn just about every hat he could in New England. And again, how many coaches do you see who coach on both sides of the ball? So that speaks to probably his ability to be successful somewhere else. Do you think they cut Ryan Tannehill? Think they start over?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, yeah.
I think that it's going to be a full wash for the most part. I mean, they have some exciting components that are there right now, but they need a massive overhaul, and it's got to start at the quarterback position with Tannehill. I think he's done. I think Tannehill, if you were to ask him right now, if we were to go downstate here in the Sunshine State and meet face-to-face, he's probably thinking he's done with Miami. I think for fantasy purposes, to kind of bring it back to the core of what this podcast is Kenyon Drake finally going to be the guy? That's the question we're all asking.
Give
him
a chance. What a fascinating time for the division where Adam Gase goes from Miami to the Jets. Flores is going to go from New England to Miami. So you have all this just it's like an inbreeding in this division. I don't know what to call it.
Yeah. It's bizarre. They don't like to see other people, just themselves. So it's strange. We'll see how it shakes out.
An interesting point, though. Just wanted to mention, we can go back to the Rams and Talib, who's not been playing up to snuff. He left the game against Dallas briefly for potential concussion. Like, he just hasn't been fully healthy.
And that's when they got shredded. In that game,
yes.
When Talib went out, he is such an integral part of that secondary because Marcus Peters sucks.
I don't think you can suck. I think he's a disruptive DB.
He's not very good.
Well, he is, I will admit, liable to particular focus lapses in focus. But still, I do think he's like a disruptive. He's got a lot of breakups. Like I don't think his play is something that you can say. He doesn't allow himself to get shredded when he's healthy because he did have a calf injury. I know everyone was talking about the Michael Thomas game, over 200 yards, but he also wasn't 100% healthy. They are healthy now. And so Sean McVay is going to try to give it to Belichick. I think the other interesting thing about Sean McVay is when you watch him on the sidelines, he's feeling the moment. Like, he's taking big breaths. And that to me is really refreshing.
Feeling the moment or choking on the moment? That field goal from the 1 yard line. He is a modern analytics coach, okay? When he does that, that tells me he's tight in a big moment. I think McVay, I wouldn't be surprised if he had that kind of mistake in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but just if he had went for it and they hadn't gotten it, you would have heard the
It's math. It's been proven. It's like a blackjack hand.
No, I'm with Scott on this one.
Against a 10.
Yeah, I think 100%.
That there's also a sign of like maturity and temperance, and we have to. I love Sean McVay.
I want to make this. If you redrafted all the coaches right now, I would take him first, unquestionably. But that was a mistake.
Will you say what Mark Stopa said about it? Because I do think that that's a particularly interesting.
Yeah, Mark Stopa, Stopa Law Firm League. His analogy was, it was like McVay was at the blackjack table and he raised his bet on a hand. And then he didn't have the nerve to take a hit on 15 against a 10 because, oh, this is a big hand. The stakes are high. I don't want to get knocked out right now.
So we'll see. We will see. But I think we're all in agreement. Go Rams, right?
Tell me this. Negative. This is the first time I've said this all year. I've been fading Gronkowski all year, but I thought he looked healthy and active and dangerous in that Kansas City game. How are the Rams? Now, give him credit, right? Thomas went ballistic against him in the first matchup. Thomas was not really a factor in that second game, in the championship game. I want to know how the Rams are going to stop Gronkowski, because there's no good – even though Gronkowski doesn't have the same agility as he used to, he's still the biggest guy in the field.
I don't think Mark Barron, our middle linebacker, is going to be up
our
to
middle linebacker.
God.
The bandwagon. There's still room, Scotty. There's still room on there.
Has McVay put you on the staff? Are you a quality control assistant or something?
I mean, we are the same height.
Okay.
So,
are you a sideline coach? The guy that, you know, makes sure he doesn't run
out of
the
same memory as McVay? Can you remember what you ate 10 years ago? Or
10 years ago? No. I can tell you I had some delicious paella last night.
Yeah, it was good.
And so, all right, let's talk about.
Oh, wait a second. Yeah. Were we going to give our picks?
Patriots and under.
You're obviously taking the Rams.
No, Patriots and under.
Yeah, I'm taking the under. Taking the Pats. And I got New England when the line opened at +1, which is a miracle in and of itself because, again, everywhere you go, it's -2.5. Public action is heavy on New England. About 82% of the public spread tickets, according to Sports Insights, right now on New England. I wouldn't be surprised.
So means the line's going to move, right?
The line's going to move, and it's probably going to move. I wouldn't be surprised by kickoff. It's like New England -3.5 because the Sharps, they're waiting, kind of hanging out in the weeds right now, in the shadows, seeing where the public action is, and then they'll swoop in and make their decision probably on Saturday or Friday. So watch that line action. I think there's going to be significant movement one way or another based on what the Sharps do.
Here's what it comes down to for me. Jared Goff hasn't looked right for about 2 months. And for the Rams to win this game, Goff has to play better than Brady.
He has to be more than a manager, which he's been an average manager at best. We have not seen the
Pro Bowl level Jared Goff that we saw in the first half. Part of it's Cooper Kupp, part of it's some other things that maybe we can't even pinpoint, but I find it hard to believe he's going to outplay Brady.
Well, and what about Todd Gurley? I mean, Todd Gurley's kind of taking a back seat to CJ Anderson. The claims are he's not healthy. Gurley himself.
No, the team is claiming that he is.
Yeah, exactly.
But so, we are all looking at him and seeing him.
Are we?
I
mean, I think CJ Anderson right now is just a more effective back because he's fresher. I mean, he's a guy who only had, 90 touches or so, you know, up until last week on the entire season.
And when the Raiders kicked him to the curb, I thought his career was over.
Oh, I did too. I mean, when he looked washed up completely. He was the definition, the epitome of Ham and Ager when he went to Carolina. I mean, he looks like a Weeble Wobble out there.
A teapot on wheels.
A rolling beer keg.
Well, he looks like, remember, Jerome Bettis broke in with the Rams 2 years. He reminded me of that Jerome Bettis 2 year stint. You know, he's gotten a lot thicker. Nothing, no lateral movement. He's not sidestepping guys. He's just running straight ahead.
It's nature on means balls.
It really is.
It's very effective right now.
Well, he wasn't as effective in the game against the Saints, despite the fact that they had key injuries.
The Saints, even down rankings, I mean, they just plug the run. They've done it all year. That was going to be a struggle.
But he had his hands weren't great. There was a missed a handoff, right? He almost dropped a ball.
Yeah.
They were things. I also think, I agree with you, Scott, about about Jared Goff completely. He hasn't looked right. I was at that game against Dallas and was biting my nails a couple of times. And interestingly, in the New Orleans game, you saw Sean McVay looking at him saying, did you not hear me? Like, what? And we all know about the noise at, you know, in New Orleans.
Remember
the
home Goff field running to the sidelines to tell his tight end the play? I've never seen a quarterback move that much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That was awesome. I've never seen that either. That was pretty
incredible. That was awesome.
Yeah.
But that is, I mean, we have known that Sean McVay has been playing Cyrano de Bergerac in Goff's ear. So I would say the Patriots like to use every advantage. Maybe if you're the Rams, you make a couple of audio checks right before the game.
Belichick with 2 weeks. They've been there before. The experience matters in a stage this big.
Sure.
I'd be surprised if the Rams didn't come out tight.
I think that would probably be.
And that game plays to the under.
Pound New England and under. And look, I had the Chiefs last week. I'm not a homer
saying
here.
I thought New England would cover. If I'm putting action on this game, I'm not taking the Rams. That doesn't mean I'm not going to. I'm happy wrong.
The smart money bet here, and Scott would probably agree with me, if you are going to side with the Rams, just take the money line. Just take it. Get the better odds and take the money line.
When you're under three, you're really just picking a winner. Nobody picks the Rams and says, well, they're going to lose by a point. You know, and I'm getting two and a half.
Yeah, exactly.
You take the points, but you're really saying, I think they're going to win. So Brad's right. If you are on the Rams side, just take the money line and get the improved juice.
And we'll have some player props. There's a whole new props episode coming up next week about this game. Matt Harmon's going to dive in on that, I believe.
Proper.
Right? Is that correct? Yeah.
Thank you, Producer Brett. Producer Brett is in here with us.
Yeah. Laying back on a pillow.
Do you have any thoughts about the FST since you've been here?
I arrived after everything was over.
Fantastic.
iPod only. I don't network. I don't go to awards. We got
iPod
snubbed.
Only.
We were nominated. This podcast was nominated for an award, but we didn't take home the
we
the
had
crystal,
a Titanic haul. Whatever. We have nothing to complain
about.
We
did pretty good.
Thank you, FSTA, FSGA.
Exactly.
Yeah. It was a good run this year.
It was always next.
Fantasy
always
Football
next year
Live getting an award. We got all the hardware.
Yeah, we had the best commissioner, best app. A nod to our
the
product team.
Those guys worked their tails off.
Guy Lake and Dan Haight and Michael Lazarus. I'm awesome. Michael Grab, and those guys are fantastic. And they did I'm just really proud to be out in front of those guys with
this
game.
It's cool to work with actual engineers who are true fantasy sports enthusiasts, but also therefore care very much about a user and customer experience.
Yeah,
so
they're all players.
Y'all are benefiting from their genius and their enthusiasm. We're also going to, you're also hopefully going to benefit from what I'm going to ask Brad and Scott next. You know, on the last episode, I asked Matt and Dalton at the end of the season, what they had learned, if there was anything that you might adjust going into 2019. And so what are your thoughts? What were you right about all year that you want to brag about?
Nothing. I was wrong about everything.
That's not
true. The only thing I got right, and actually Dalton Del Don and I were both on the same page, was Mahomes. We had him top 10. I had him as high as 7 at one point, and then put my tail between my legs at the beginning or right before the beginning of the season, moved him down, I think, to 10.
Oh, you didn't
9.
Have Weibos about it?
No, it was Team Raisins. Mm. I got a little skittish for some stupid reason and slid him down just a little bit more, but I was still top 10 in the end. I mean, you saw the skill set in college. You know that Andy Reid is a brilliant offensive mind, and they would make the right decisions with him. But he exceeded all of my wildest expectations and anybody's. I mean, he was just such a marvel, you know, with the no look passes and the mobility and just the.
So where
the
do
laser.
You think he gets picked? I'm not asking you
He'll
where
be
you're
a
ranking
second round
him.
Pick.
You think? I think
and
the first
I will
round.
Not be investing at that.
I agree
price
on both
point.
Of those things. Second round pick, I won't be in either.
I think he's going the first round. Like.
Well, it depends upon scoring format. If you're
six
talking
points.
A traditional now 6 point per passing touchdown league or all touchdown
not
league,
not four, right?
Yeah, he's probably in the conversation in the back end of round one.
He'll go in the first round of the most casual of leagues.
Correct.
Any league with any experience is not going to go that.
No, early. I mean because we all wait on quarterbacks anymore.
Plus,
as
we know how important a bell cow running back is. There aren't that many. That was one of the things I got right this year. Is I said my first pick has to be a running back. Yep. No more of the zero RB. I mean, you know, it's great. You can find somebody in the late rounds or waiver wire pickup who does great at running back. Those guys will always emerge, but you can't plan on that. If your league is any good, everybody else is fighting for those guys too. So I got that.
What's old is new again. You're right. And just to speak to that, mm-hmm. I mean, the running theory is alive and well. I mean, historically, we would always preach running back, running back, running back in the first three rounds of your draft. You know, we're not necessarily advocating that, but I've already participated in a couple of mocks, like stupid early mocks, and it is dominated It's old school by running backs in round one.
Plus, remember what these backs do now is they catch 50 to 70 passes. In the case of Christian McCaffrey, maybe 100 passes. So, Todd Gurley's going to catch 70 passes. And we've seen Zeke Elliott has finally been incorporated in the passing game. We'll get Le'Veon Bell next year.
Well, and Nick Chubb now threat. In this air raid style with Monken calling the shots as offensive coordinator.
Maybe David Johnson with a better setup. Was he really set up to fail last year? So, he'll be back and play.
Well, let's dig into running backs because we posted our way too early rankings.
By the way, I get plenty of things wrong. I'm just not going to mention them right now. I'll be fair about that. Full disclosure.
Royce Freeman, guilty as charged.
I was doing you a solid little, here, very Scott. Little,
very little Mahomes,
around.
By the way. Let me just mention my mistake really quickly. I think I was really good with fading players. I didn't have Fournette. I didn't have Brady and Gronkowski. Bunch of other guys I faded who were strong fades, but I don't think I was target driven enough. I think I was more agnostic. Take what the room gives me. Oh, this value is good. And next year, I actually want to say the players I really want to get, I'm going to be a little bit more proactive, sticking my neck out and getting them.
Go get your boy.
Yeah.
All right.
Do more of that.
Get
next
your guys.
Year.
What are we saying?
Yeah. You and I have said that. I don't know. We talked about my whiffs. They were both Mahomes and Fournette. So we don't need to dwell on it anymore. New year. So interestingly, when looking at your ranks, you both have 9 of the 10 same players, but Brad includes David Johnson, and Scott, your outlier is Joe Mixon.
Yeah, Mixon, a little bit younger model. Cincinnati had a terrible year, but it wasn't Mixon's fault. He's going to be a 3-down back. It looks like Gio Bernard is a really easy cut for them. So I just feel like I'm getting in on the trajectory. The mileage seems a little bit better for Mixon. And even though I talked earlier about Johnson with a new coaching staff, I mean, we still don't know if Cliff Kingsbury is going to work in the NFL or not.
Right.
Granted, the Bengals have all sorts of problems too, but I thought Mixon, even on a bad team last year, and it really got ugly once Dalton got hurt, he's one of those few 3-down backs. And I think he should be in the top 10 for everybody's list next year. I think he'll be a second round pick.
He's carrying the offense.
Well, he is. I mean, he's a centerpiece. I mean, they made some improvements on the offensive line via the draft last year. You saw some strides in that category. They still need to trend upward. That line is still below average across the board. Andy Dalton's got to play better. You got to hope AJ Green's healthy and 100% ready to go.
But even when that line wasn't at 100%, Mixon was still finding holes.
Well, and to speak to what Scott's saying, it's a volume game, right? And they were utilizing him out wide on occasion. He was very active in the pass game. So he's getting those
very
touches.
Efficient in the passing game,
and
too.
And even against stiff competition, he was putting up consistently, 90 to 110 combined yards and finding the end zone regularity. So he's safe. If you're talking about ceiling floor, the floor is very high for Joe Mixon just based on volume alone.
But you include David Johnson, and it's an interesting thing because I'm going to assume that you include David Johnson because his talent is spectacular, but we are now in a place where CJ Anderson, who we talked about earlier, and Damian Williams, these quote these running backs who maybe haven't shown up, right? Who were cut by other teams, and we're thinking about the, like, does running back talent matter or is it completely scheme dependent? But David Johnson, for you, like, I'm imagining that his talent, because it is so exceptional, does matter, and that's why you've included it.
It matters, and it fits. I think the air raid system at Kingsbury is going to run perfectly. A lot of misdirection, a lot of spread. It's almost exclusively shotgun. Josh Rosen's a terrible fit for it. I honestly believe.
I love this. I just want to
preface.
Well,
we were talking about this. Yeah, at dinner, this is my bold prediction of the offseason.
I think it's so smart.
We've already heard, some rumors through back channels that this is a possibility, but I think Rosen gets dealt before the draft. I think Kyler Murray's going to be the top pick unless Arizona trades down, knowing that they could maybe get him at 6 or 7. And I think Rosen goes to the Giants. And the Giants are probably likely to give up a first rounder for him because they need an heir apparent to Eli Manning.
Who his agents reported do expect him to return. Of course, it's his agent speak, so there's some
There's
posturing.
A lot of overlap here, so it does make sense. It's just whether or not does Kingsbury believe, in his own words back in October, when he was asked, then he was head coach of Texas Tech, would you take Kyler Murray in the first round of the NFL if you were a head coach or a GM? And he said, absolutely, without question. He's despite his diminutive frame, the guy that's going to be a very divisive player, once the combine numbers come out, once the draft rolls around, just because of his small stature. But God, he's a freak athlete and a guy that fits that air raid to a T. So to get back to David Johnson.
But by the way, it wouldn't be completely unprecedented for a team to move on from a quarterback early. I mean, the Falcons drafted Brett Favre in the second round and traded him after 1 year.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
It's happened before a few times.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think that's a very astute point there, Scotty. And so just to get back to David Johnson, because of the misdirection, because of the spacing that the air raid creates, if you have a competent passer there, you know, deliver the goods down the field with consistency and accuracy, that just opens the ground game up even more. And we know how freakish of a receiver that David Johnson is. I think you're going to see him line up in the slot a ton.
I also think he's going to be a pretty intense value.
How? I mean,
he will.
Mike McCoy had no idea what he was doing with Johnson.
Well, and I think Leftwich really didn't either. It's just odd. He was so criminally misused by McCoy. And the fact I find it comical that McCoy's still getting interviews. I mean, the Jaguars has interviewed him recently. It's like he's going to get fired for the third time in the season.
When are teams going to realize it's better to fail with a new idea than an old idea? I mean, Mike McCoy is an old idea.
That's why I appreciate the upside of the unknown.
Yeah,
and a lot of people, is it a wild card? Could he fall flat on his face? Absolutely.
But give yourself the upside of a modern coach.
Yeah, and a modern system.
Back to the running back rankings, Brad. We're going to split hairs here, but I think we have to talk about the top three. You have Gurley at one and Zeke at three. Scott, you have those reversed. Zeke is up top. I'm assuming that's because of the volume in the passing game that we saw him take on.
Yeah, a year younger too, or at least 1 year younger in his career. This also speaks to the fact that last year I wanted the one pick. I was willing to lie, beg, borrow, and steal to get the one pick. This year I'd be very happy with anything in the top three. So I think next year it's going to be a little bit safer when you land further down the first round. But if I did have the first pick right now, and of course we're months away, not that far, but a few months away from drafting, I would take Elliott. Just 1 year, you know, of less mileage on his body. And the one season, of course, he was suspended. So
I think we should also add, obviously, number two is Saquon Barkley, and we're all in agreement.
Well, in full disclosure, right now as it stands, I've got Gurley there, but I may convince myself as, you know, the months wear on, I may put Barkley at
one. You could take Barkley one. I have no
problem
with that.
I don't disagree with any perspective that Scott had on Zeke Elliott. He's 100% right. I mean, it's really a 1A, 1B, 1C kind of situation here. And, you know, even if you're further down the ladder, I mean, there's some just tremendous running backs. We're going to talk about Nick Chubb, I think, here in a minute. But, you know, I'm not disparaging anybody. I think Elliott has one of the safest floors imaginable. And that's why Scott is probably arguing and advocating for him at one overall. I think Saquon is in a very similar conversation. There still need to be offensive upgrades made this offseason, whether via free agency or the draft for the Giants. But Barkley's just a freak of nature and young, and we like that. It doesn't have as high as mileage.
Things went about as bad as they could for Barkley, and he has still had a monster season. Eli wasn't good. Beckham was hurt for a while.
The O-line was trash.
Engram had a really poor second season, and it didn't stop. It didn't seem to matter. Barkley was great anyway.
I think he only had two games where he failed to reach 100 combined yards. I think that's it.
That is the keys of the kingdom right there, to have that kind of consistency. Yep. In any week, he could be the number one scoring player. He could be the one guy you had to have in your DFS lineup. But even when he has a quote-unquote off game, you're still getting 125 total yards.
Well, even if he only had 20 rushing yards, he'd put up 80 receiving.
Exactly.
So that versatility.
Jack of all trades, guys.
Game trip never matters with him.
Right.
You know,
that is huge too, right?
Fantastic player.
I'm gonna
make sure I have some Barkley next year.
We're gonna talk about Nick Chubb, but I personally am a little conflicted about Christian McCaffrey. I will fully admit, heading into this season, I didn't really think that Rivera was gonna.
Well, they were talking about 30 promise. Times a game.
Right, and I was like, no way. You don't add CJ Anderson for all that. But my other concern was that could Christian McCaffrey return on peak value? You were drafting him at peak value. Could he really do better than what the RB7 that he was being drafted at? He sure did. So now I think we all are ranking him inside the top five. In fact, at the number four spot. The question is, I mean, we have to say, like, he's now going to be drafted at peak value again. Can he return on that price?
So this is something that we talk about in fantasy baseball all the time for years. And Scott, you know exactly where I'm going to come from. Do you pay for the career year on the expectation that it can be matched or exceeded? I mean, it's already historic. He's, you know, number one all time in most receptions by a running back in a single season, passing Matt Forte. Though I think Larry Sanders, if you include fullbacks, I think Larry Sanders had 1 year that was a little bit more than McCaffrey in that category. You could look that up. But I don't think he can meet the level of output that he had.
So you'll pay
this
for the
year.
Floor.
But you'll pay for the floor. And the other lingering question here is, what the hell is going on with Cam Newton?
Right?
Yeah. I mean, there is a realistic possibility that Cam Newton, I mean, there was whispers that he may sit out next year. That shoulder is an issue. He hasn't gone under the knife. We don't know what's going to happen.
There's a lot of moving parts. We don't know the status of Greg Olsen.
Entering his age 30 season.
That's true. Olsen claims he's coming back, but he's really good in the booth or on
also
set.
Also has a consistent foot problem.
He does.
Like, it is now a recurring foot issue.
And he's a family man with some issues at home with his kids. I love Greg Olsen. I hope he gets out of the game, you know, a year early rather than a year late.
So there are a lot of lingering questions here, but the one safe is McCaffrey. I'm not going to.
Does the body type worry you? I just look at his body and I know, look, they use him proactively as a receiver. You could almost say he is a receiver, right? And that's the way I want him used. I want this usage to continue.
Well, they're using Moore and Samuel and Christian McCaffrey in sometimes interchangeably. Like, they're all these hybrid gadget.
I want McCaffrey tackled by the smallest guys in the defense, not the biggest guys in the defense. That's a priority for me. Now, this year they got it right. I hope they get it right next year, because that's a big difference between I can see him lasting most of the season or all season, and he's going to play 9 games.
Well, he's a modern day Reggie Bush. That's exactly who he is, right?
So just damn
him with
faint
praise, man. It's the best he could do.
Well, Reggie had some amazing seasons early in his career, particularly in New Orleans. Well, that's true. At USC, most certainly.
He was an okay fantasy back. I mean, last year, nobody ever won their league by having Reggie Bush. Last year, you could have won your league by having Christian McCaffrey.
The year that he went over 1,000 on the ground with Miami, he was extraordinary.
He was good, useful.
Yeah. He was, and he was a great value that year.
I mean, this Reggie Bush talk is fantastic, but let's get back to the year 2019 and talk about Le'Veon Bell. We're ranking him inside the top 10.
It's a placeholder. Okay. We don't know where he is.
Well, you know we're going to get questions about it, so let's address.
Well, we're in Tampa right now. This is a perfect prime location where he could wind up. Now, salary-wise, the Buccaneers got to unload in the offseason to afford the services of a Le'Veon based on what he's command. But Arians is here. They've got an established relationship. There's a clear need at running back because Ronald Jones was a disaster.
Sure.
Peyton Barber was serviceable.
He's not the answer.
No, he's not the answer. He was serviceable. He wasn't terrible.
He'd be a great number two back, actually.
Yeah,
he can't be your starter.
Agree.
He's on a one-year minimum league deal.
He's not that bad. So
I think he's getting paid $400,000.
He's a nice steps player, but you need to do better than that with your.
So what they do, you know, what they could do is, are they going to shell out the big bucks to bring Le'Veon Bell in? It makes a ton of sense, based on Arians and that relationship.
Yeah,
that
that's
exists.
A nice fit.
I think it's a very dumb fiscal move for this organization that's attempting to rebuild. They have so many holes on defense. That's where they need to make the investment.
And hashtag running back talent doesn't matter.
And the next Le'Veon Bell's in this draft class. His name is Dave Montgomery, kid out of Iowa State, who is the spitting image of him in terms of his versatility. He's about the same level of athlete. I think that's going to be proven at the combine. He's a guy that, you know, maybe in the back half of round one, maybe in round two, depending upon, you know, the buzz that surrounds him. And, you know, we talk about, is it worth investing in a round one running back? Saquon Barkley was amazing, but the Giants bombed. Though that you brought up the Sony Michel example, and where's New England? And he's a key cog in that system. But if I am running the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I don't sign Lev. I go out and find the next guy who's a hell of a lot cheaper, who's going to be equally as effective in my
and doesn't have the wear and tear.
Unless you can somehow convince Bell to take an undermarket offer, I think he's a sucker play. He's got a lot of mileage, and he's
going to the Jets.
Yeah, I can see that. They have the cap room. They want to make a splash.
He's
I don't
going
think
to
they
the
should
Jets.
Sign him, but I can
and
see
then Gase
it.
Will give him like 12 touches per game.
By the way, between Gase and the offensive coordinator they signed, I weep for Sam Darnold. I love Darnold. I think he can be a great player, but
that's
maybe
where I
not
want
with those guys.
I want a Kingsbury and Darnold to sync
that
up.
Royal guy, Matt Royal, was in play there for a while, and you know he wasn't allowed to hire his own
remember,
staff.
Remember,
which is
Gase
insanity.
Was like the hot it dude. Just a couple of years ago.
To be fair, he never had consistent quarterback play or even quarterback health in Miami. So if you're pro Gase, you'd say, well, that was a losing hand. How are you going to win with Brock Osweiler?
We have talked about Adam Gase way too much on this podcast, so I don't want to go back down there. We can talk about Nick Chubb, though, because he is someone who certainly made a splash. And I remember when he was drafted, we were all completely stunned that he was drafted by Cleveland because they had brought in
Carlos Hyde
at the time. Yeah. And so
we, Duke Johnson too.
Yep.
Duke's
showing flashes, and then that's another guy that was just completely misused, underused. It was ridiculous. But that will change in Monken's system. 100%. I think
it
Duke
started
Johnson will
to,
have
but
interesting
also
and of course,
you've
Freddie
got,
did a great job when he took over. I mean, now he's been promoted to a position where he's not going to call the plays anymore, but Nick Chubb is, I think, a defendable first round pick next year.
Oh, I think he's an indisputable first round pick.
You think he's a top 10, top 8 kind of guy?
Yeah, I think he's a guy. If we're talking about that next tier, who's the one player that could leap into the top 3 overall in 2020 drafts? I think Nick Chubb's that guy. And the reason I say that is because it is going to be more of an air raid style system that doesn't necessarily benefit a big bruising running back. But Chubb had some high degree of difficulty catches late in the year. That's an area where he really impressed me more so than how he was utilized at Georgia. That's going to carry over in this system. And I think he's an excellent fit. And, you know, we know that Baker Mayfield's got to elevate his game.
You love to run from spread formations. You can make big plays. I mean, he was making splashy plays when Hugh Jackson was still there. You know, he had the Oakland game.
When he was given the opportunity.
Right, you know, Oakland game with like 2 or 3 touches, he goes over 100 yards.
That's right, yeah.
It's almost impossible to do. But, yeah, Chubb's an ascending talent. You want the running backs early in their career. Mayfield is going to make defenses have to be honest. I'd like to see them get one more impactful receiver.
A boundary wide receiver is exactly what they need. You know, Brandon Funson and I, Brandon, of course, at The Athletic, we were talking about this the other day. Guy like Tyler Williams from the Chargers. He's a free agent. He'd be an excellent fit. Tyrell Williams. It would be an excellent fit working opposite of Antonio Callaway. And then you still have David Njoku there to go along with Chubb. I think that's the name to watch that could wind up in Cleveland unless they invest via the draft.
Is Mayfield the number 2 talent in the league right now? If we were redrafting everybody, Mahomes would go first immediately.
Yeah.
Would Mayfield be the second pick?
I think there's a strong argument to be made. I just love the fact, just to get to stick on Baker here for a second, that she had a come to Jesus moment about what was it, week 6, week 7 with Baker?
I love him.
Now you've come full circle. Like she had reservations, questions, and a lot of it was, you know, size. You know, can he come in and
size doesn't matter.
Size and personality. You thought his personality might be a little edgy, a little Manziel-ish in a way.
I didn't make the direct Manziel comp.
You went Manziel on him?
I did not.
Apology,
I did
come
not.
On, get
you,
it out here.
You had some concerns.
But I didn't use that comp because I felt like that comp was tired. But I will say that I was concerned about his size and I was concerned about his ego. And sometimes a giant ego will handicap you.
You want your quarterback to be the most confident player in the field.
But I also want him to be able to absorb information from more experienced coaches. And sometimes, I think that's kind of I liked Josh Rosen a lot because of his ego. And I think it's worked against him a little. He had a lot working against him. But, you know, you and I will continue to fight about Josh Rosen because I thought he looked much better than you did.
On the tennis court, yeah.
Wow. But yes,
nobody comes to his birthday party.
I like, this is not the draft movie written by the NFL, by the way.
Even Kevin Costner has washed his hands of Josh Rosen. That's what it's come to.
This is rough.
Jerry Maguire will not represent Josh Rosen.
You're
going
to come around to this. I mean, maybe goes to New York. And
I said I enjoyed it. I set you up to make a brilliant point that I agreed with.
He's got to get out of Arizona.
That's fine. Great. Let him get out of Arizona. I'm completely in agreement. In terms of Baker Mayfield, I dig his swag. I dig that he goes after some of these journalists, if you
will. I'm sorry, Baker Mayfield. Signed, Liz Loza.
I am sorry.
Right.
Like, I would say probably next time.
Do you have the Baker poster on your wall now? The one
with
that
the tiger?
Against the, yeah, the car
no,
shirt.
I don't think you should.
That's a good one.
Plus, you're going to make a million Baker Kitchens puns last year. Next year, we know that. Both of you guys are. Brad may be actually restricted from that.
But. Yeah, it's limitless in its potential. But where do you draft Baker Mayfield from a fantasy perspective? Is he a lock top 10 quarterback next year?
Absolutely. But who's going to drag him? Who's the receiver who's going to drag him?
Well, you still have Landry there. I mean, it's just, they get a boundary receiver, you know, again, via free agency or the draft. It fixes everything.
I hope if they do that, I will reevaluate. I think he might be a little bit of a trap, in part because I think this is going to be Chubb's offense.
Would you rather have Darnold?
Well, no.
Not anymore. I think Baker Mayfield's on that 12 to 14 range for me right now.
I'd be fine with Baker. I wouldn't draft him proactively.
I'd let him fall to me.
I'd let him fall to me.
That's another guy, too, that I think is going to
get. You guys are giving me invaluable information for our auction draft in July, which is obscenely early.
So, I've already qualified for the playoffs.
$20, Baker Mayfield. Going once, twice, sold to me. Thank you very much.
Have fun with that. All right, any closing thoughts? Because we are going to get out of here, maybe hydrate a little bit, get some breakfast.
More coffee.
More coffee for you. Any closing thoughts, Scott? It's so nice to be here in person with you. What are your closing thoughts or wishes or hopes for your New England Patriots as they enter Atlanta.
I hope they win, and I hope everybody who is in that retirement range thinks about retiring. I think Brady should get out while he has his health. I think Gronkowski will retire. And by the way, I'm to tease something here. I talked about one of the mistakes I made this year. I think I didn't do enough best ball drafts. I'm just going to say, plant this flag near. I'm going to do more best ball drafts in 2019.
Yes. I think we're all going to do more.
I'm going to bring you along with me.
I think that's a pretty astute prediction. All right. With that, you can follow us on Twitter and submit your questions to @YahooFantasy. I'm @LizLoza_FF. That is @Scott_Pianowski. And of course, @YahooNoise. We out.
Yeah, peace. Peace out. Pats.
Noise out. Pats out.